Session number 12709, Mr. Alfred Davis, reel 2.
Mr. Albert Davis, reel 2. What kind of equipment were you issued with in the militia at this time, Mr. Davis?
Well, apart from the battle dress, we were issued with one web belt, approximately 2 inches wide, one set of cross belts, inch wide, and a small pack. A pink pack valise, what they call a valise, and two Bren pouches, one left and one right, which all fit together from the belt. You just put your arms through the pack, push it forward, and clip it onto the Bren pouches.
Bren pouches, what did they look like?
They were 6 or 8 inches tall, 4 inches wide, I think, 4.5 wide, fit in two Bren magazines. I think there's two on each side, which would be a total of four. So long since I can't remember, two or maybe three. When emergency, you'd get more in. But if you got too many, they'd just jump out. So,
what was meant to be carried in the packs?
Well, your mess tin, cleaning towels, knife and fork, socks, spare socks, old, which was a sewing kit, needle and thread, buttons, and one ground sheet. I think that's about all. Yes, the water bottle was, which we had issued as well, was hung on our left-hand side. That was hung on the side. There'd be a spare set of underwear. That's about all I can remember, and other things that you accumulate.
Were you issued with any weapons from the beginning?
After a few days, yeah, a rifle. Lee Enfield rifle, which was full of grease, and I had to degrease it. And
how did you degrease it?
Well, cleaning cloths, drop of oil, and drop of petrol if you get hold of it. No. Tried anything we could get hold of to clean them. But they hadn't got to be spotlessly clean, because they were very, very strict on clean rifles. By the time we'd finished, and so were our boots, come to that, very highly polished. We'd probably spend 2 hours a night polishing a pair of boots. You see your face through the toe caps almost, because they were really good boots then, proper leather, ob nails, and you could hear every click. Now, it was good drill then.
Was there any trick for getting the polish up to standard?
Oh yes, I used to use the a toothbrush, an old toothbrush, the bone handle, and what we call spit and polish. Put some polish on, spit on your toe cap and rub it around with this bone handled toothbrush until you get a nice smooth but dull finish once you got the dull finish, then you really give it a polishing. And if it wasn't quite right, or if there's any marks in it, then you'd have to go over it again. It was like building up French polish, if you like, coat after coat, until you got a film on it that would, even if you scratch it, easy wipe out. Just like French polishing anything.
How did you keep your belts and straps clean?
There we had some khaki Blanco. Green it was. Well, khaki green. And I'd get Blanco the belt, polish the brasses, polish a cap badge and buttons. And everything else, the web equipment, was Blancoed until it was really good looking. If it wasn't satisfactory, go back and do it again.
And this, you say, was every night?
Well, mostly every night, yeah. You see, lads were more industrious cleaning up the stuff than they were when they were working.
You said in your billets that you had to keep those clean. What methods were used to keep the billets particularly clean?
There was a couple of flat bumpers there, with one with polish and one with rag to put the polish on. And you used to have to get all of them, push them along backwards and forward, slightly polish them first, put the polish on first, then lads following up, polishing it off. Or some of the lads used to get rags on the feet tied to the shoes so that they wouldn't mark, put any marks on it.
Once it was polished, how strict was it from the point of view of using your billet room?
Well, every morning the sergeant would come round and have an inspection, and all your kit was laid out. The blankets folded up to their exact size, neat and tidy. When there was a kit inspection, you had to have everything laid out as described on the placard. And if there's anything missing, wanted to know where it was, what you'd done with it, and why had you got rid of it, or
were things taken, stolen?
Yes, yeah, one or two things stolen, yeah. I know one particular lad from Birmingham, he said soldiering was not for him in the first place. He said, "I'm not going to be a soldier at all." He was just, the only thing he wanted was booze. And he'd do anything, he'd pinch anything for booze. You couldn't always say it was him, pinch things. But I do know this, that when we were allowed out of town, the night he'd already flogged his kit for booze money outside the, and he borrowed somebody else's uniform, because you had inspection before you were allowed through that barrier gate to go downtown. And he also borrowed his boots. He walked down to town, pub to pub, got in as far as the boat house inn. Whether he got drunk or not, I don't know. Well, I should imagine he would get drunk, because that was his, every time he come back in the barracks, he was dragged in. Anyway, whether he jumped or whether he was pushed, I don't know. What I think, they said he was pushed, he jumped over the rails and committed suicide. Anyway, he jumped in the river, and I know he was drowned, because I had to go to his funeral.
Were there other men who took to the army routine in a bad way, or couldn't
biggest,
cope?
biggest majority said no, the army wasn't for them. Most of them, like myself, fell asleep, well, somebody's got to do it. If everybody says that, well, it's no good going and having a war. Might as well all go home and let Germany take us over. But they always, I just take things as they came along.
If you'd lost equipment or had it stolen, what was the retribution for that? What happened to you?
Well, you'd have to pay for it. That's if they could prove that, you know, you had. But if you, they're fair enough in a way. If you could prove that it was stolen and not flogged, like, because there was quite a few flogging different things, you might get away with half price. You know, they're pretty reasonable.
The barrack room, was it heated in any form?
Yes. Yes, it wasn't. The barracks were pretty good. They were good.
Was this kind of stove heating? Or?
Yes, it was stove heating, yeah.
And was was that kept clean?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah. There was radiators. No, it couldn't have been stove heating because there was radiators. Yeah, there was radiators under the windows. But it was fairly, there was no grumble whatsoever about the barracks. Well, our block of barracks I'm talking about, not, I don't know about the others.
How many men would you have to a barrack room?
Probably 20 to 30. I should think about 30 to a barrack block. That's the doorways in the middle, so I'm talking about half. That would probably be about 60 men in the pool block.
And was there an NCO sleeping in the same quarters in charge?
Yeah, a lower ranked lance corporal or corporal. The sergeant would walk around every night and every morning and inspect it. No time for laziness. Everything was done at the double. You hadn't got time to breathe. I've never known my muscles ache, but it probably did me good.
What was the general routine of training at this time?
Well, reveille, I think, was half six. Up straight away, no lazing in bed. The first thing was issued was a drink of tea and a biscuit. If you weren't there within a few minutes, you'd had it. Then it was PT kit on and a run, or round the block, or out through the fields. Perhaps come back, get changed, wash, change, and then parade for breakfast. Breakfast would be different times because of different things going on. Perhaps have your breakfast, back to the barracks, usually always at the double, running. I hadn't got time to walk. The time program was so tight. Run to the barracks, get changed, perhaps go to a lecture. Then from the lecture, there'd be half an hour on the drill parade. That was when it really did tell on you. Drill parade over, maybe. Then probably a lecture about weaponry. Then by this time there would be dinner. Perhaps an hour for dinner. Back precisely on time. And perhaps more PT. PT Best, but this was in the gym. Vaulting horses, parallel bars and all sorts. Probably half an hour in there or more. I don't know, time was just went. And perhaps cleaning up, half an hour cleaning up barracks, you were sent round picking papers up and even matchsticks. It was spotless. And then perhaps more lectures. There's lots of lectures over different things. Weaponry. Why we were there. What was expected of us. What we'd do if anything happened, you know. And they must have had an inclination then that we would be transferred to different battalions.
You mentioned lectures on weapons and so forth, Mr. Davis. What form did they take?
Well, the weapons, sometimes, first of all, it was the rifle, the ordinary rifle, man's best friend, as they called it. That was very little to do with stripping down, because you're not supposed to strip them down unless something went wrong with them. But what it could do, the velocity, how many rounds a minute they fired, and how accurate they were in general. And then, of course, the other weapons, the Bren gun, that was a different kettle of fish, because you did have to strip that down. There's spare barrels, spare magazines, and you learned each part by a name. It was a matter then of seeing how quick and smooth you could change a barrel or change a magazine to get it in firing order. Although, of course, on that there was a gas chamber too. Change a gas chamber or turn it round to whichever one you required. That again got bipod legs on the front. But that I considered a good weapon.
In your experience, it turned out to be what you'd expected it to be as a weapon.
Yes, yes.
Had it any faults?
Not really. Sometimes you had trouble with the gas jets, gas block, or if it firing too many, the barrel got too hot, well, you could change it. But really there wasn't very many faults with it. It's very accurate too. And the rifle was accurate, providing it was aligned rightly in the first place. And that was done by the expert who sighted the rifle up for you. But the rest of that, I don't think, we didn't bother about pistols or anything like that. The main two was the rifle and the Bren gun. No Sten gun then.
Did you have any gas precautions trainings?
Yes.
What form did they take?
Gas mask, just practice the quickness of putting it on and breathing with it as soon in a confined space and taking it off again. But that wasn't stressed very much. I remember going in a gas chamber once with it on and taking it off just to have a sniff of the gas, but it was quickly back on again.
What gas would that be?
Tear gas.
Do drilling on the square as a light infantry soldier, what did that take?
That was the thing dreaded, because it made every limb ache. Well, in the first place, it started off with standing to attention, stand at ease, stand easy. When you get that off pat, then you started right turn, left turn, about turn. Right, then it come to the marching. And they had a pace stick, you know, approximately 30 inches. That's what you... 30 inches was a step line. And being a light infantry depot, King Shropshire Light Infantry, it was a quick pace. That's when it started, all very slow at first, but as we got more into it, the pace quickened up to regimental pace. And by gum, you'd got to pick them up. You hadn't got time to put them down, just keep on picking them up. But by the time we were finished, in 3 months, we were fit, and we could march. You know, everything seemed to click together. Although this, looking at us first, I don't suppose they'd say, well, what a shower we've got. Well, they told us, what a shower we've got here. Never mind, we'll put you into shape. And we were.
Did you do any route marching?
Oh, yes, yeah.
What distances were you doing?
Then I don't think we went extra long distances, perhaps 10 miles, 10 bit more maybe, but not very long marches. I can't remember doing a very long one anyway, until I was transferred. And then we did some long marches.
Was there a routine too, route marches by stages? You have stops, rests?
Yes, about, you march for 50 minutes and a 10 minutes rest. 50 minutes, 10 minutes rest in the hour.
And what pace was this?
Oh, that was, pace was about around 120 route march.
And what were you carrying?
But as we approached the depot back again, you halted, and then on entering the depot, for perhaps a mile outside the depot, and entering the depot, you were at full regimental pace until you got inside the depot and halted.
What were you carrying? What kind of equipment were you carrying?
Just a small valise, mostly. Small valise, water bottle, probably 12, 14 pounds on our back, not full kit. Rifle at the trail, and that was all right. It's when it's full pack was the worst.
Did you have a bayonet?
Oh, yes.
And was the bayonet trained?
I forgot about the bayonet, yes. That was another difficult thing. Bayonet practice. But that was tough, really. But it seemed senseless to me. You know, you're prodding a bag full of hay or straw. Nothing like the real thing. I shouldn't be. Personally, I never bayoneted a bloke. I wouldn't wish to. Shoot him, yes. Bayonet him, no. A bullet's quicker than a bayonet, and cleaner.
Did the army at this stage, though, put a great deal of emphasis on bayonet training?
Definitely. Definitely. I think that's one of the worst things they could do, because bayonet training, yes, they were still thinking on the 1914-18 war. Well, lots of things had advanced then. And I mean, 1914, 18, they hadn't got the brain gun for a start. And they hadn't got a rifle like the Lee Enfield. So, to me, the quickest way of killing anybody was by shooting them. And therefore, that was in my mind all the time. The quickest way was the best way. If you got close in to use a bayonet, well, anything could go wrong. But I didn't let him get that close. As soon as I knew he was enemy, that was it.
In your 3 months or so, that whatever period was in the militia, did you do any tactical training?
Very little. A little bit on the fields behind the barracks, but not a great deal, no. We didn't do any tactical training until I was transferred to the Durham Light Infantry. That's when our tactical training started.
Were you doing any trenches, digging of trenches?
No. It was purely getting one fit to be able to use a rifle. We did a bit on the rifle range, and it's more the 2-2 though, 2-2 range. Not much 303. And getting us fit and being able to use weapons. Tactical training came later on. Of course, I didn't know that the war was going to... We may have done some more had we have been there for the 6 months. I don't know. But they had, when war broke out, they had to cut it short.
Life in the barracks themselves, was there any bullying going on? Any of this initiation ceremonies you hear of today?
No, not a lot. Not as I was aware of. Some used to say that they've been pushed around, you know, but on the other hand, they asked for it. Some don't know when enough's enough. The two PT instructors, there was one named Hankey, very strict, and he thought he was God's gift. And the other one was Wilson. Very nice fella, too. Good PT instructor. Again, I had it right. You got the... Always get seems to get one good, one bad. But they're both good instructors. But Wilson was the gentleman of the two.
What other memories and recollections have you got of your NCOs at this time?
The NCOs, I couldn't tell you the name of any of them. But one or two sergeants weren't bad. Most of them we thought were too strict and too... trying to be too bossy. You could tell that they, you know, got that airy grace about them. I'm the kiddie. But it didn't become them. Corporals weren't too bad. But the sergeants, some of the sergeants said, well, apart from when we're on parade, it's very rare you saw the sergeant or the sergeant majors because they were always in the mess. And there was a corporal's mess and there was a private's canteen.
What about officers? Have you got any recollections of your officers?
Officers, what little I had, they seemed all right. They seemed all right, you know, and they told us what they had to tell us. They didn't come round looking for trouble or... They just visited us, lectured us, and let us know what was wanted of us. They were pretty decent. The sergeants were kind of snobbish, you know. They went overboard a bit.
Did you find it difficult at all being very much in a man's world without any ladies around you? Or?
Oh, yes, yeah. It certainly started making me look after myself. Now, if you didn't look after yourself, nobody else will. You know, you've got to sort of say, right, I'm going to do that, or that's what I'm going to do, and do it. Lots of lads have come crying, well, I don't know what to do or where to go. And, well, you try and help them. Like.
You were able to cope yourself with the discipline that was being enforced upon you.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, because, as I said before, my dad was very strict. Discipline didn't make any difference to me. I've always had to do as I was told, so I could accept that. But lots of lads couldn't. And I know that they said that soldier wasn't for them. First chance they got, they would be deserters. They'd abscond. Especially when they knew the war broke out. I think a few did, but we never found out.